All right, we ready to go there, Reg? Levels look good. Keep them there. I'll give you the three S's. I'll give you the music. I'll give you the countdown. You give me the music, and I'll give you the podcast. I don't even know how this goes. It's only been 5 years. All right, here we go. Are you ready? Put it in the book. 289, episode 289er. Wow. Next week is 300. I don't know what that means. It sounds impressive. We'll have to do something, I guess. Oh, no, what am I talking? It's not 300. It's 390. I don't even know how to add. Jesus. All right, well, forget my bad arithmetic, and let's just move on. Okay, here we go. Three S's, star, smile, strong. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Whoa, slow down. I got to first introduce it. You're quick on the draw there. Slow down. Let me first introduce. Yeah, okay. All right, here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com. Or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast, we are there. But that ain't enough. It's your job as a listener to get out there and spread the word. So send a link, send a message, tell your friends, tell your family, tell anybody that you know who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Don't forget to rate and subscribe to this podcast, because your loyalty and devotion is much appreciated. And if you like what you hear, don't forget, go to WGNRadio.com, hit the prompt for this podcast, and you will find all previous 288 episodes sitting in a vault, just waiting for you. We have received the Good Housekeeping seal of binge approval for a podcast. So we've got some validation here. So anyway, tell your friends. If you like what you hear now, listen to what we've done before so you'll know where we're going in the future. If there's 288 podcasts in the vault, no, 89, yeah, 88, then this has to be episode 289. And joining us for episode 289 is our occasional contributor to the Pop Culture Club, Emily Arminetti. Hello, Emily. How are you doing?
Hey, Jim. I'm good, thanks. How are you?
It's great to hear from you. I assume that you are preparing for the holidays. You have a good Thanksgiving?
Yes, I did. Thanks. How was yours?
It was fine. It was, you know, the usual. You know, yeah. I mean, you know, it's fine.
A little turkey, a little stuffing.
Yeah, a little. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's the only holiday that's built around eating.
I mean, yeah, it's pretty much. What I like about it is it's like family and like, you know, just that cozy like food, but and no gifts involved.
Yeah, that
you know,
yeah.
It's like there's no.
Yeah, there. You know, that is true. I you know, the older you get, it's like that gift thing. It becomes like a major like obstacle to things. It's always hovering.
And it's just also too much consumerism. You know?
Yeah,
like Thanksgiving has that like pure.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, kind of pure of heart.
Yeah, because there is no there's no expectation or there's no stress involved. There's no anticipation from the other people, and then you're sitting there worried. Oh, is this a good present? Is this a bad present? I got you. You're just like, hey, you know what? We're just going to get together and eat.
Well, yeah. And you know what? And have a nice time. Yeah. And watch football.
Right.
The problem I also have now with the holidays, now that I have children, is that everyone, like all of our, everyone in our families, they text me and are like, what do your kids want? Send me their list. Blah, blah. No thought. It's just.
Right.
If I'm just telling you, okay, you're going to get them this and you what's the point anyway?
I know. It's like an option.
I do appreciate, though, on the flip side,
right,
I do appreciate that I do have to ask people like, oh, like what I try to do is say, oh, what's so-and-so into these days, you know? But like, I really feel like a lot of times with, you know, family, extended families, I'm sure other parents kind of get this. Like some people really are just down to send me their list. Where's their list? What's on the list?
Well, it's become, you know? it's such an obligation. I've always been most touched by presents that I never expected. Like when somebody did something out of the blue for something, even for an occasion, but I never would have expected either them to do it. Maybe I didn't expect that they thought of me, you know, like, oh, wow. You know, I considered you a friend, but this was very nice of you. You know, it was just out of the blue. It wasn't revolving around any kind of an occasion. And those are the things that I remember most. I can remember this day, you know, I got a job one time I got, and a friend of ours just did a nice gesture. And I mean, I wasn't expecting, right? I mean, just, hey, I just got a new job. You know, congratulations, right? That's the most that you usually get. But they went out of their way and they actually created something for me, you know? And I'm like, and I remember this was like almost 30 years ago. And I still remember that. I can't tell you what I got for Christmas last year.
Right.
But I remember that because it was so, and I actually remember a birthday present that, that you were a part of when we worked together.
Oh.
Yeah. I think you were there. Maybe you weren't there yet. I don't know. But I think, yeah, you had to have been because I was, you know, I was the head of the group, but, you guys, for my birthday, you bought me, or at least the group did. Maybe you, I assume you were with us yet at that time, but maybe not. But they bought me this this book that was like a companion book to the Beatles anthology film that came out like in the mid to late 90s.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I never, and it was something that I really wanted and liked. And I had no clue that they were going to get that for me. And I was, when I opened, I was like, wow, this is like the perfect gift.
Right. These, you know, people really know me.
Yeah. And as opposed to that, like you're saying, oh, where's your list? Mm-hmm. This was something that some thought went into, and it was complete. I didn't expect anything really. So yeah, I as time goes on, I've always been somebody, I would rather give gifts than receive them. I enjoy getting gifts for people. I mean, I appreciate when someone gets me something. But I get more of a kick out of giving than receiving.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. And I think it's like, it's nice. And it is nice when you see something that you're like, oh, that would be perfect for so-and-so. Or they would really love this.
Yeah, and then they do.
Right. It should be, gift giving should just be like, when you come across something that is so perfect for someone you know, just get it and send it to them.
Exactly. You don't need it yet.
No birthday gifts, right? No Christmas gifts. Just like they're, spontaneous gifting.
There shouldn't be an occasion. If you know, when there's an occasion for it, then that's where the obligation comes in. And to me, it sort of loses its specialness, because like, well, you're thinking of now. I mean, you can look at that cynically. It's like, okay, if it's your birthday, at least someone's remembering your birthday, so that's nice. But to your point, I'd rather get something on, you know, April 14th, which means nothing to me, you know, because it's just someone said, oh, I saw this and thought of you. Well, how nice is that?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So. But I, you know, also we're getting older, so it's like, you don't need
it. Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I mean, I'm throwing really stuff out. Anything, yeah, I don't really. Yeah, I'm throwing stuff out. So, yeah, right. I don't. I'm done accumulating. I mean, I'm still, you know. I'm still buying things, obviously, but I'm not buying them the way I used to. I'm more interested in what goes out than what comes in. So
no, I totally agree.
Yeah,
it's better to be in purging mode.
Yeah. Oh, I love to purge.
Consuming.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
No, I am becoming a possession anorexic.
That's good.
Yeah, I've just, you know, I just coined that right now.
Yeah.
I'm a possession anorexic. Mm-hmm. I purge my possessions.
I mean, I know, you know, you honestly, you've talked about it a lot on the podcast. I know what lengths you've had to go to like even, you know, go through all your parents' stuff.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And it's important though, because you have to figure out what is sentimental and what to keep and what you would never want to.
Yeah.
You don't want to just blindly start giving bins of things away.
Right.
You know there's stuff in there that's important to you that you want to hang on to. Then you also know you can't hang on to everything, and you have to be thoughtful about sorting through it. And that's the thing. It's like you know more acutely than ever, because you've been going through this exercise for some time.
Yeah.
Honestly, if we weren't in a pandemic, I would have already had you here to Austin to start going through my stuff. That's still my goal. My goal is still to get you to come here and use all of the skills that you've attained.
Well, you know what makes me mad? There is this book that some woman has written. I don't know her name, but there's some that's like the cool, trendy book about
the Marie Kondo thing.
Yeah. Is that it? Yeah. And, you know, and I'm sorry, but I'm so mad because she's getting all this credit for, you know, putting some kind of a theory behind, you know, how to throw things out. Isn't it something like if you're happy, if it brings you joy, keep it or something?
Here's her thing. First of all, you have to take everything out of Florida. Let's say it's like a closet that you're doing. You
right.
take everything out and you throw it in a big heap, because the first thing you have to do is realize how
right.
much you actually have.
Right.
Okay, fine. I would, honestly, that would not work for me, but whatever. But her main thing is you have to take each individual item, hold it in your hands, and decide, does this spark joy
right.
in me? And if it does, then you keep it. If it doesn't, then you thank it.
And so what did I say? And what did I say? Do you, if you remember, if I said, if it doesn't have luster, it doesn't pass muster.
Right.
So that's that was the same thought process. And I came up with this, and I talked about it on the radio at least 7 or 8 years ago. And I created the word declutter. Because I said, I am beginning to declutter in my house. And I remember people are going, what does that even mean? And I'm like, I'm you know, there's this clutter, I'm decluttering. And now I hear declutter everywhere.
Well, listen, I think there's room for everyone here. So you need to get your pitch together. Next thing you know, you'll have a book.
I know. I'm so mad because I was on this decluttering kick for 8 years ago. When I turned 50, I was like, you know, I think I'm going to begin to get, because I got so much stuff. And so I'm so mad because I'm like, I've just been doing this on my own. This was no big revelation to me. And yet clearly a lot of people have a lot of problems with throwing stuff out. I'm like, why did I just keep this to myself? I could have been on Regis and Kathy Lee. I could have been on Drew Barrymore.
Yes, you would have been, for sure.
Oh, that's totally definitely.
Right up her alley.
That's right up her alley. Oh, my God.
Well, listen, if you can get your pitch together, you get your
I know, but now it's but I, now it's gone. It's been done.
I think there's room for everyone.
Really?
Maybe. This stuff. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And maybe the fact that it's like maybe the fact that it's a guy doing it would even be more.
I think that is. You could have your own edge. And when you get your Netflix show, I will be your first episode.
Yeah, instead of hoarders, you're going to be you're like the hoarder. But you know, but to that point now, because you've got, you know, young children that are getting to the age now where they are going to start to accumulate their own stuff.
Oh, they already are.
Well,
are you kidding me?
Well, I understand that, but there's going to be stuff that that means something to them. You know, they're getting to an age where they can actually begin to put meaning and emotion to it, not just accumulating, but actually, oh, this was my blank when I did this. You know, you associate, memories with objects.
Yes.
And that's my whole, if it doesn't, if it's lost its luster, it doesn't pass muster. So now that, I guess, wasn't as new agey as if it doesn't bring you joy.
That's spark joy.
Oh, see, thank you. See, I never would have put those words together. I'm over there rhyming and bringing, making this nice little, this catchy slogan. And she's over there with her, if it doesn't spark joy. I could just hear like wind chimes behind that phrase. but no, so my point is, if you want to do what you should start to be doing, because my mom, you know, lover as well as you know, screaming, she kept everything. So she had,
yeah,
she had no filter. So what I'm saying to you is that here's my next, you know, kind of advice now on the decluttering world. So learn, as I said, I always try to learn from mistakes. So my mom kept everything, which is great because I have some stuff that I never would have had, and I decided to keep it. But I also had to throw out a hell of a lot of stuff that was meaningless. Yeah. So my point is you as a mom, who you are intimately involved in your children's lives, you can tell, you will know, oh, that's their favorite doll, or that was when they did this. So you could actually, as they now get older now and start accumulating things, you can probably make a fairly good decision on what will be important to them later on, like what they will remember, as opposed to keeping everything. And then, you know, so you might be able to take that step back and say, okay, you know what? I remember we bought them this and they didn't really care about it. And so that can get thrown out. And yet, oh my gosh, you know, she or he used to sleep with this doll every night, you know, for 5 years. Well, you can't throw that out. I mean, I literally have, you know, I put up my Christmas stuff, geez, already, you know, 3 weeks ago. But I found this one Santa doll that now I never knew how old it was, but I just found a picture of me recently with it, and I had to have been less than a year old. So that doll is like, you know, more than 50 years old.
Right.
And I do remember that doll. So now, I'm glad that she saved that. He's on the couch right now. So I'm so glad that she did save that doll, because I remember that doll later, but I never knew that it was from when I was almost 1 year old.
Okay. Well, I always tell this story, and I think I do. This right here gives me a good sense of what for my kids to hang on to and what not to worry about. When I moved to London, and you know this, I was like in my late 20s, and it was a big move that came kind of out of the blue. And so my parents were a little bit caught off guard by it, but happy for me, because it was a very exciting time.
Right.
And an exciting place to go, of course.
And you met your husband there.
I did. Yeah. I met my husband living over there, but they had mixed emotions about it too, because they were like, you're going to be so far away. And up to that point, all of their kids, we were adults, but still we all lived in Chicago.
Right.
And so we got to O'Hare. This was the day I was leaving. I mean, literally packing up, here are my suitcases I'm bringing with. My dad, I think, took a couple boxes to a shipping place to have shipped over there, but I wasn't bringing a lot with me, you know, just some clothes and a few personal items. So, you know, my parents stayed with me, you know, parked the car at O'Hare, stayed with me in line for the check-in.
When
you could do that. Oh, yeah, you could, waited with me. They kind of hung around with me until I had to go through security, like absolute last minute, have to go through. And so while we're waiting in the check-in, I saw my mom, like, doing something with one of my suitcases. And I was like, what are you doing over there? And she's like, nothing, never mind. No, just when you get there, there's something in there for you, just wait until you get there and you get yourself settled in. And I was like, all right, whatever, lady.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
these are bags that I'm checking anyway.
Right.
You know? Yeah. So we check the bags and, you know, I'm off on my big journey, and so of course it's an overnight flight, and so I land, and then you land. I hardly sleep on the overnight flight. You've done that.
Oh yes, all the time, right? Yeah, most of the time.
And and so you get there, and you know you're kind of you're exhausted because you haven't really slept, and you go through the immigration process, and now here I am. I'm showing up with a visa now. You know, like I am entering this country as like a person who's going to live here. And I'm there. And so I do it, you know, the whole thing. And so it was, I mean, it all at once felt like a normal trip in a sense, but it wasn't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I get everything situated. I get into the center of town and that they were putting me up, that my company was putting me up at, you know, like a temporary housing place while I found it looked for a flat. So I get into this sort of, it was like a studio apartment type place. And I get in there and I put my bags down and it's like 10 o'clock in the morning and I know no one in London. I mean, I know no one. Right. And one person through work and that was it.
Right.
And I wasn't going to be, it was Saturday morning and I wasn't going to be going into the office until Monday morning. So I'm like, I sit down on this bed and I'm really, really tired. And I'm like, I look around, you know, here are my bags and here I am in this room. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like I live here now.
Right.
Like I'm not just getting on a plane next week and going,
right,
wow,
I
live here. And then they had this moment of like, what do I do now?
Right.
And then I remembered my mom faffing around with my baggage. Right. So I go over to this suitcase and I open up this pocket, which is like one of the front pockets. And in the front pocket, she had a little stowaway. It was the baby doll that my aunt gave me the day I was born.
Oh my God.
And I dragged that baby doll around with me for all of my toddlerhood.
Yeah,
and all
see?
Of my younger years. I named her baby Leah. And I dragged that doll everywhere. I had no idea that my mom had it, that it
see?
Was still around.
Right.
I didn't. And she stored baby Leah. Oh, stowed her away.
Right.
And I remembered this feeling that like washed over me
right.
of like, it was such an important like moment and it was an important time in my life. And to have my mom think about that,
right.
to arrive in this strange place where I know no one and
right.
have that.
She was kind of giving you like a comfort. Exactly.
Yes. That I didn't even know I needed
right.
or had with me, you know,
yeah.
it was really pretty amazing. And to this day, baby Leah
see?
Sits on a shelf.
Yeah.
In my house. And I definitely.
Yeah. So that's my point is that
those are the things.
Yeah. yeah. So, and like I said, and I've got things like that all around the house here, from my childhood and the same thing like that. And so my point is that, you know, it's almost your job now. You know, as a, in addition to, you know, ordering bouncy houses for birthday parties,
yeah.
it's also your job to, as I said before, kind of take a step back and find those things and find those moments, and keep those things as well. But I would just caution you is to be somewhat discerning. Just don't keep everything.
No,
you will be able to, like your mom clearly knew that doll was a major part of your growing up situation. And so she was like, I can't throw her out. And she maybe never knew why she ever kept it and when she would ever even need to bring it out again. But then this situation came out of nowhere, and she thought, think about that. She thought of that doll. You know, you're
right. Well, also, it's so important, too, because it's like, it was kind of always known that that doll was gifted to me the day I was born. You know, as a baby, I was too young to even play with a doll, right? And it was a really beautiful Madame Alexander doll that was probably meant to be kept on the shelves, but like my mom doesn't really believe in that and let me play with it as a kid and let me drag it all over the
place. Right.
And it is, it's little, like its little outfit is like all tattered
right.
and torn, you know, and faded beyond belief and whatever. But you know, it's honestly like, it is one of my prized possessions. It is like one
yeah.
of the things that, you know, if I, you know, if the house were on fire, I'd obviously
right.
get the kids out. And then I'd be like,
where's baby
know,
Leah?
Grabbing for baby Leah.
Right.
Yeah.
No, but so that is my suggestion to you is that at this point now, your kids are getting to that age where you, my point is you will start to be throwing some things out because they will be outgrowing some things. So
oh, they do all the time.
Well, this is my point.
I'm good. I'm pretty ruthless, but I agree. I know what their baby Leahs are.
Right. Well, that's what. Yeah. So that's good because you this way. But then also know what is not their baby Leahs and throw that out because you don't want to have what I had to go through. So that's my little bit there.
I know.
Well, anyway, this is. I mean, according to my script. Yeah. You know, that we had for today. I mean, now, okay, we're on page. Russell. Yeah, turn now. Go to page 14, Emily.
Yeah.
All right. I had no idea we were going to talk about decluttering.
No.
That was not on the agenda. But that's the great thing about the podcast is that it can go in any direction. And, you know, we will just follow it where it goes. But I did want to talk about, because your name, you came up, I thought of you first thing a few weeks ago. When I saw this in the news, it was actually making national news on the internet, and I immediately contacted you, and I thought it would be fun to talk about, because it does breach into a few different subjects. So the Rolling Stones have been touring for the last couple of months, and in fact, Mick Jagger has been making quite a scene. Every city he goes to now, he has been photographed at different places in each city, and it kind of started as a fluke. I don't remember what city he was in. He went to some city, and he went to a bar one night, incognito, with a hat on, and no one recognized him in the bar.
Yes,
and that
actually,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and so then after that, he posted it because he's just standing by himself drinking a beer in this bar, and clearly no one's recognized him. And he went up to the bar and ordered a drink, and the bartender didn't recognize him. Most likely probably a guy in his 20s and 30s who doesn't know who this 80-year-old guy is, even though he's coming in doing a chicken walk. he just thought he's probably some drunk guy. But Mick Jagger, now every stop on this tour, he's been going to different places and being photographed. But my point is, so the Stones have gotten back. They sadly lost Charlie Watts right before this tour started.
Yeah.
And but it's been a very successful tour, and everybody's talking about how age-defying the whole band is, and certainly Jagger. I mean, he's like 76, 77, 78 years old now, and still performing great. So they've been following this tour. But what made the show in Austin, Texas, a little newsworthy was how horrible the concert security was, how horrible overall, apparently, the concert organization and preparation was in terms of traffic to get to the venue, traffic to get in the venue, handling the large amounts of crowds inside the venue. It was an outdoor venue. It sounds like it was a herd of cattle. Of people, it took people hours not only to get out of the parking lot, but I saw some pictures of people just walking toward the exits with, you know, just jammed in. It was a COVID, soup.
Oh, well.
And then I saw people complaining online about how poorly this entire concert and this event was planned, and I saw that it was in Austin, Texas, and I remembered from several podcasts ago, you mentioning about a year ago how you had tickets to the Rolling Stones, and now you were going to have to wait because the show got postponed. And I said, yeah. I bet you that Emily was at that show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I emailed you, and sure enough, you were there. So give us a rundown on not only, we'll talk about the show itself, but so talk about what was the scene at this venue? Where was this venue? How far from the city limits? Give a little rundown as to what was going on.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's Circuit of the Americas, which is like a racetrack. I mean.
Oh, wow. It's like it's a racetrack?
Yeah, and just recently there was like an F1 race.
See, the Rolling Stones should have known. They don't do well at racetracks. The last time they did a concert at a racetrack was in Altamont in 1969, and the Hells Angels killed somebody there.
Yes, I. Yes,
and they pretty much ruined the. They ended the '60s on a very sour note. So the Rolling Stones should know first off the bat they should not be doing concerts at racetracks. But go ahead.
I mean, okay. So this place is kind of interesting because there's an amphitheater there, which is small. It's, you know, it's got like an it's an outdoor, you know, amphitheater with like a lawn section, and that's where I've gone to see.
So like a Poplar Creek here in Chicago, or a
like the
Tinley Park, the Hollywood Casino.
Yes, yeah, totally. And I've been there to see. So that's where you'd see people like I've seen Steely Dan and Elvis Costello and
right.
Chicago and the Doobie Brothers.
Right.
And I had tickets for Beck there that I didn't end up being able to go to the show, but like that's the kind of stuff. Like that's
right.
a smaller venue. You know?
Yeah.
For some reason, my husband kept thinking that's an amphitheater on the grounds of the racetrack, but it's like just one small part of it.
Right.
This particular racetrack then can also be configured for what they call a super stage. And so that's like, so every time, for example, when they have a race, like when they have F1, you know, every night there's a huge musical artist that plays. So like most recently, like Billy Joel played one night. I remember a couple of years or so after I moved here, I remember a lot of people going there to see Justin Timberlake was
right.
one of the headliners after, you know, the day of racing and whatever. And so, you know, those are so they can convert this place to that kind of super stage.
Right.
And I don't know why. I kept trying to tell my husband in the lead up to this, like he was like blown away. Oh, we're going to be seeing the Rolling Stones there. And I think I kept saying to him, like, it's not going to be the same as the
right.
other concerts.
It's not going to be intimate. This is going to be 80,000 people. Yeah.
Like, this is the super stage
stuff, yeah.
but I just don't think it was like computing because he had never seen it before. And I had never seen it before either, but like, I think I kind of follow more of the live music scene.
Right.
So I was kind of aware of like some of the bigger acts and what happens there. And also when I bought the tickets, you know, I knew what the layout was because I had to decide
whether
we want
our
tickets,
right.
you know?
Yeah.
And this, And I will say that we'll come on to this, but my decision making getting the tickets, I think, massively helped in terms of our overall experience here related to all of the disastrous stuff you were mentioning. But so this place is like, let's see. I mean, it's not that far outside of the city limits. I mean, it can't be more than like 10 miles from downtown. It's probably from my front door. It should be about a 25-minute drive. It is a little bit out in the middle of nowhere. Just, I mean, relatively speaking.
Yeah, it's a racetrack. Like, right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know,
it's a racetrack. So it's kind of out. It's like past the airport and there's not really anything around it. Okay. Like there's not really anything around it. Just roads.
Yeah.
And the first time I went out there to go to a concert, I was very new in town. It was the first night I was here. And my husband had these tickets and he was like, I don't know if we should leave the kids with the sitter on our first night in Austin. And I was like, yeah, no, I agree. But can I still go? And I got an Uber out to this place. Cause, you know, I don't even think we had a car yet. Like we had just moved here from Brooklyn. And I remember the guy driving. There was a point, he seemed like a nice guy, but there was a point where I was like, is this guy taking me out to a cornfield
right.
to murder me?
I know. I've had that feeling many times when I've gone either with on cabs or something where I don't know where I'm going. I'm in a strange city and I'm in a rural area.
Around.
I think I'm getting kidnapped.
Right. So there's like nothing around, but then all of a sudden you come up on this venue, right? So, you know, as soon as I saw that in the distance, I was like, okay, great, I'm not getting murdered. Okay,
right.
fine. So, and since then, I've been there a number of times for smaller concerts. So it's not really that far outside of the city limits. And it really should only take about maybe 20, 25
now,
minutes to get
but
there.
The other side of the coin is, since it's kind of in a rural area, I would assume that it doesn't have the best, kind of infrastructure to handle a huge crowd, right? In terms of roads.
Well, I mean, apparently not, but that's the weird thing about it. It's like, it's not like this is the first time a big event has happened at this place. So it is kind of perplexing. I mean, we left, the concert started at 7:30. And I, to be honest with you, I didn't even know if there was an opening actor. I mean, you kind of assume there's
right.
going to be, but like my plan was I want to be there by 7:30, just in case.
Right.
Like, I just don't know. And I hadn't really taken the time to look into it or whatever. So my husband, we were going with friends and we wanted to, these are the friends of ours who were, came here from Nicaragua for the concert.
Oh my God.
This is 2 years in the making. You bought these tickets two years ago. Right.
Yeah.
And you and I discussed it when we talked about all of the various things that had been canceled because of COVID. And this was one of the things that we had tickets for and didn't know was going to happen. So it is kind of crazy that we actually finally made it, you know, it's finally here, it's happening. And, so we wanted to go and have a good time and be able to have some drinks and whatever. So, and not have to worry about parking. So we got, we just, you know, organized a driver ahead of time to come, you know, drop us off and also pick us up. Because what I also learned from my first time being out there, if you Uber out there or you ride share out there, you get stuck in the middle of nowhere with not really much of a cell signal in a long line of people who are all also trying to book Ubers on their phones at the same time. So based on our experience, I was like, we need to have this booked ahead of time and just have someone already scheduled to come get us. So it kind of worked out. We left our house at 5:15, which I thought, when my husband said he booked the car for 5:15, I was like, that seems too early. And he was like, well, that's the only time the guy could do and blah, blah. I was like, all right, fine. So I'm thinking, we have whatever, we'll get there, we'll hang out, we'll have some food. You know, they have food trucks and drink, you know, bars and stuff. So 5:15, we pulled out of my driveway at 5:15. We actually finally arrived. And I think we even got out of the car before, well before where the guy was actually going to drop us off. We finally got dropped off at 7:45.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I mean, we were in the car for like, I honestly, there was a point where I just, we, at one point we were like, should we just get out and walk? And I was like, well, I don't know about walking. Cause you are, I mean, the thing is like, there's, you know, there are various like expressways around here and highways and stuff. And you, there are some main, you know, highways that you can kind of take to get out that way. But then it's the problem. The problem with that is it, people were coming from all directions. I understand a lot of people were coming also from like outside of Austin.
Well, they were saying that people were getting out of the cars and walking it, and there's nowhere to walk. I mean, they're literally walking on the dirt next to the road, so it wasn't very safe.
I saw a guy get out of his car on the side of the road to how can I put this delicately? Let's just say he needed a potty break.
Right.
This guy gets out of his car, and honestly, the traffic was so bad that, I mean, he was out there for quite some time, and like, still his car had only moved like 12 inches.
Right.
And I was like, what is this guy going to do if traffic starts moving and his car takes off? Oh. I mean, no problem. Like, you know, he could.
Yeah, so did you miss the beginning of the show?
No. So here's the thing. And this is why we got lucky, because after the fact, when I started reading about what a disaster everything was. So for us, traffic was really terrible. And I was a little worried for some. I was like, there was a point where I was like, are we actually even going to make it for the beginning? So we got out of the car, and there were these guys with like, rickshaw guys. I see a bunch of these rickshaw guys.
Right,
yeah. And I said to my husband, like, let's go. We're getting on these. Cause like, even once we got out, like, it would have been a really long walk to the entrance where we needed to be. So like, that's the one good thing I would say they did, is like, they were pretty clear on the website about, if you have tickets for these sections, this is your entrance. If you have tickets for these sections, this is your entrance. And so we see these guys with the rickshaws, and I said to them, hey, can you know, take us? And they're like, yeah, sure. You know, like, whatever, 10 bucks. Fine. Right. We're like, fine, sold, you know? And as these guys are like,
so you got in the rickshaw?
People are walking. People are walking everywhere. And we are just flying by them, right? Because now we want to get in as quickly as possible. We don't want to miss the beginning of the show. We do want to get something to eat. Because now we're starving, too.
Right, I mean,
you know, want to get something to eat, want to get some drinks, and we don't want to miss the start of the show.
Right.
So we're like, anything. And honestly, these guys initially were like, oh, well, we can take you to this entrance. And I was like, we're really supposed to go to this entrance, it says, for our tickets. Yeah. And the guy's like, all right, we could do that. We would have been walking for another, I would say at least another mile and a half.
Wow.
Had we just walked.
So how fast did the rickshaw guy get you there?
He was fast. He got us there in like 5 minutes.
So was he? And, was he on a bike or was he running?
No, he wasn't running. He was on a bike.
Oh, okay, I thought it was a real rickshaw.
Well, no, I mean it's like we're in Austin. Okay?
Well, I don't know.
He was on a bike.
Oh, okay.
So we're all these throngs of people are like walking, but we are flying on these rickshaws. So that was the second thing that really.
Were there four people, or was it two to a rickshaw?
Oh, it was two to a rickshaw. So yeah. My husband and I were in one, and our friends, another couple, were in the other. So fine. So now here's the third.
Were you thing. Going downhill at all? Was he getting any kind of a?
No. Oh. It was pretty flat. This guy was working hard.
Yeah,
he was cool. He knew we wanted. I think the general vibe there was that things were going really wrong.
Yeah,
so, like even these rickshaw guys knew, like all these people are scrambling to get to where they need to be because like the show's going to start any
right.
minute.
Yeah,
they've been sitting whatever. So yeah. so bear in mind, like thank goodness we didn't have to deal with parking because that could have been a whole other disaster, and I'm sure it was. But right. So we finally get there. And we get to the, now here's the next thing that really helped us out. So we had, I bought what they call gold circle tickets, which, looking at the venue kind of looked like, well, this is our best bet if we want to have like a good views, be relatively close to the stage,
right.
But we don't need to be in the pit, right. Which there was actually a pit. I'm sure for the Rolling Stones, but let's put it this way. We were like among the youngest people there. So I don't think it was like a mosh pit type pit.
Right, right.
But with COVID, I don't need to be in the big crowd, all crowded in with people. So there was this, our entrance. And so I was worried as we're being rickshawed to this thing, I'm worried like, oh great. How long is the line going to be just to get to right. show our tickets,
right.
get them scanned, and get over. They were putting wristbands on everyone
so
you had your section
right.
wristband because only you can get in that section. Well, I think being Gold Circle was really kind of key because our entrance had hardly anyone coming in it.
Oh, nice.
And we had our own little area of like food and bars
nice.
And stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was like our area, and which was kind of a general admission standing, which is fine. That's kind of what I like. Mm-hmm. And then right behind us, there was kind of a grandstand of bleacher seating.
Right.
And then beyond that, there were like various different lawns, like the gold lawn, the bronze lawn, So the area that we were in, very luckily, was very contained. And I could tell looking behind me that beyond us, there was like a whole other
world.
A whole other world. And so for us, like that was pretty key because we did not get... We got very quickly, like we were able to really quickly get food and drinks, and we were able to get situated where we were going to be standing for the show, like pretty quickly. We didn't really get caught up in massive crowds, and we were able to get there like kind of pretty much just, we got positioned like just in time. We didn't have to do a lot of waiting around.
Oh, wow.
The opening act had finished. And so,
they did have an opening act. They did have an opening act.
Oh, yeah, really? They did. It was some band I've never even heard of.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, so that all actually. So the traffic part was really the worst part, like for us. But what I've read and heard is that like there were some people who just never like turned around and just headed back home.
Oh yeah, no. I mean, I saw some video and it was a horror story. I mean, it just looked like I said the traffic getting into it. It looked like it was a two lane road, or even if it was a four lane road, it didn't matter because there was so many people trying to get in there that, like you said, it just looked like bumper to bumper to bumper to bumper to bumper to bumper.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then once people got in, as I said, I saw this overhead view shot of people walking through the concourses. And it was just a sea of humanity. And so people were saying that, now it sounds like you probably were able to get out easier too then. Is that correct?
I was. And also the thing that was good about the section that we were in, we could have, if I wanted to just deal with a big crowd. I could have gone right up to the stage if I wanted to be in a crowd.
Right.
But because of, and in normal circumstances, I think for the Rolling Stones, I probably would have done that. But just because of COVID, I was like, I don't really need to do that. And also I felt like I could see the stage from where I was pretty well. So I didn't feel the need to like, it was nice because even when we were.
And Keith Richards looks better from a distance.
Oh, well, I will tell you what I think about Keith Richards in a second. But from where I was standing, there weren't even that many people. It was not as crowded because we were kind of a little near the back of our section. We kind of hanging back. So, like, I didn't feel like I was near within 6 feet of anyone but the three other people that I
went to the concert with, which
was really nice.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing I read, which is funny, do you remember that band Fastball? They had like just a couple of random.
Yeah, I remember hearing that.
Very 90s band, right?
Yeah.
I didn't even know. So apparently the lead singer of Fastball, which I haven't even heard that name in like probably since the 90s, since we worked together.
Right.
Apparently he lives in Austin. I did not know this, but he was making news because he was, well, I guess because he's somewhat known, right? He was like tweeting about like never again. He was very critical of the venue and saying, I will never ever go to another show at, it's called Circuit of the Americas, but people just refer to it as Coda.
Didn't they have that song, All Star? Hey now.
No, that's not Fastball. They had a couple. They had one. You know what? The thing is, you'll make fun of me. They had a song on the Varsity Blues soundtrack, and I'm a big fan of Blues. So, you know, I love my Varsity Blues.
Jesus.
Yeah. So he was like tweeting and criticizing, and he basically said, the only reason we made it to the show at all was because we paid some dude to park on his lawn and we walked the rest of the
way. So how did you leave? So how did you get home? Did you take the rickshaw home?
Well, no, we did not have to take the rickshaw home because the driver, the guy who picked us up to take us there, and he actually blew off another ride he had to pick up after us because there was no way he could get out of there. You know,
oh, right.
Like, you have to find a different way.
Yeah, right.
So anyway, I was a little worried. I was like, oh my God, what if this guy doesn't come back here to get us? You know, then what are we going to do? But no, he showed up. He was right where he said he was going to be, like out. It was not a far walk from the exit where we were coming out. And I would say, again, because we happened to be in this certain section that was kind of closed off from everything else, we had a pretty easy path out. We did hang back for a couple of minutes just to let the crowds like disperse a little bit, like give people a chance to, you know, we weren't in a massive hurry. So we were like, you know, it's either we're jamming with a bunch of people or just give it 5 minutes and let it thin out a little.
Well,
so that's what we did.
What's so ironic is that this happened in right in the aftermath of a week or so where there was deaths and trampolings at a concert. I can't remember the name of the artist now. It was a rap
That was Travis Scott. Yeah,
Travis Scott. And so you would have thought that given that there would have been a heightened awareness by organizers of any concert, especially with one of the Rolling Stones magnitude, where you know there's going to be a ton of people, that in the aftermath is like okay we better reassess what our security and what our handling of people and how they're and exits and safety, we better make sure that we've got our game on par here, because right now concert security is in the news and we don't need another crazy thing to happen here. And
I totally agree, and
to have been that disorganized really is crazy, because they should have had a major meeting right after that to say, okay, wait a minute, are we set for this?
Well, I will say that I did see, I did feel a pretty strong security presence. I felt like everywhere I looked, I saw different sheriff's departments, like, officers there and stuff, along with like regular security guards. So, I think there probably was security there in the case of like, if they had a real crowd control, like problem, like, you know, in terms of a safety problem, right?
Yeah.
I think the crowd control problem they had was inconvenience, right?
Yeah.
People were massively inconvenienced because they were had to wait in hours for traffic. Some of them.
Well, you know what's so crazy, you know, that's one. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you know, I wouldn't mind if the concert industry was new. But, you know, since the 70s, that's when the rock concert business really began to take on its impact when rock bands could start filling up major arenas like Madison Square Garden. And so you were having these major, you know, events and then these outdoor stadium shows, whether they were reconfigured, like you're saying, racetracks or, you know, football stadiums. But, you know, that I don't remember, you may have been too young to remember, but in the late 70s, early 80s, there was a death at a Who concert.
Oh yes, yeah. I think that was in Cincinnati.
Yeah, that's right. And that was general admission, and people just ran to it was just total chaos. It was indoors, but it was total chaos, and people were running to get to the front of the stage. It was general admission seating, and people got trampled, and so then lessons were learned. But inevitably we learn lessons in our society, and then we seem to forget them as time goes on. When nothing bad happens, we start to give in a little, and we start to give in a little more, and we get a little lenient, and a little lenient, and a little lenient, and then we get back to a bad situation, and then a tragedy occurs. And what I have found crazy when you're talking about you've gone to these different venues, and so have I. When they've even constructed these venues, and they know there's going to be several thousand people who are going to be coming with cars, the design might look good in a little model on a desk, but you have to think about reality. I mean, I remember, Poplar Creek, and I've been to, you know, Alpine Valley in Wisconsin. Now, Poplar Creek isn't around anymore, and it was a very great venue to see a show, but it was horrible to get in and out of. There was only one entrance with two lanes. And to your point, if you were going to see a major show, you better get there. You better leave your house at 5 o'clock. For an 8 o'clock show, because you were going to be stuck. Now, I went to Poplar Creek so often in my 20s that I knew shortcuts and ways to get out and a side entrance. So I actually used to brag on how fast I could get out of Poplar Creek.
Yeah.
But getting in, there was just one entrance and there was two lanes. And that's the way I went to see The Who one time at Alpine Valley, and I was in the parking lot for 2.5 hours.
Oh God.
Yeah. I mean, it was ridiculous.
This is reminding me, like, a handful of years ago, my parents saw Paul McCartney, and I want to say it was at Tinley Park, and they had a really terrible experience getting in, and they missed the first few songs, which they were upset about.
Yeah.
They were especially upset because they had paid for VIP parking when they bought their tickets.
Right.
But when they got there, they were told, well, sorry, the VIP lot is full. And they were like, but okay, it's kind of like the Seinfeld, anybody can take a reservation. Yeah.
Well, you're great at taking them. It's holding the reservation. And that really is the most important part of the reservation, the holding. Anybody could just take them.
And they were like upset because it was kind of the whole traffic was a fiasco, but it was the VIP parking situation and the fact that they purchased a spot that was then no longer available.
Right.
You know, which is, how do you do that?
Well, like I said,
that was critical in them missing the beginning of the show, which for something like Paul McCartney, and you know how this is. It's the same with the Stones.
Yeah.
These tickets are not cheap.
Oh,
they
no.
are nowhere. No concert tickets are cheap anymore anyway. I mean, no, remember when we used to pay $25 to see Prince?
$25. I got, like, when I went to see Elton in 1976, this ticket was $7.
Right. I mean, it's not like that anymore. You pay a lot of money to see, especially these, you know.
These VIP. Oh, yeah. And these VIP things. Those are several hundred, if not close to 1,000. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. So, but I will say that, and I do feel bad. I feel bad for people who didn't make it to the show at all, or even people who missed part of the show, because it really was a great show. I mean, I really, truly, when people talk about Mick Jagger, it is astonishing how at his age,
yeah,
he works that stage. And that's because, you know, this, you know, these stages are like the size of a football.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And then for the Stones, as you can imagine, they have this catwalk also, right, that comes out, yeah, to the center, and he is all over it the whole time. He never stops moving, and he's singing the whole time.
Yeah.
And they don't really take any breaks. I mean, they took they kicked off the show with a really nice tribute to Charlie Watts. It was a video with like a drum solo,
right?
And then they were announced, and then you get all the pyrotechnics, you know, the fireworks and everything, and it's everything you think it's going to be. But then they really only in the middle of the show, they took a brief break, and where Mick Jagger talked a little bit more about how they're dedicating this tour to him and how much they miss him. But, you know, not a lot of breaks at all. And they play a great set, a long set. So he's singing the whole time. He's in unbelievable shape. Now, Keith Richards, on the other hand, listen, he still sounds great, but...
Well, he never sounded great singing. Playing?
Not singing. Just playing.
Yeah.
But he does have a little bit of a Weekend at Bernie's thing going on. You know what I mean? Like, we almost feel like someone's behind him. Maybe he's
animatronic. He's one of those Disney animatronic robots.
Reanimated.
Yeah, like, maybe he's a hologram.
He looks very stiff, and I want to say he was wearing sunglasses the whole time that night. I don't know. I just got a Weekend at Bernie's vibe.
Yeah.
You know, but hey, I mean, honestly, like I think we're all shocked that he's still alive.
That's always the joke.
Really well.
I mean,
he plays well, and that's what matters.
Yeah.
But he didn't really move about the stage much.
No, so, I mean, if you see pictures of him, I've got a friend who's a listener to the radio as well as the podcast, and he is a major, I mean, this guy's like I am with Elton. He's actually, he's a big Elton fan too. That's where I met him. But he's more of a Stones fan than he is an Elton fan, and he's a big Elton fan, and he's always taking pictures, and he goes to just as many shows. I see him at shows all around the country, but he literally follows the Rolling Stones. I mean, on this tour, on his Facebook page, I don't know how many shows he went to, but he had to go on to at least 10 or 12, if not more, shows. And he's always in near the front, and he somehow is able to sneak in these long zoom lenses. And so some amazing photos. And so the pictures of Keith Richards are hilarious because, he's got, I mean, and that's, you know, and Mick Jagger too. You know, when you get a close up of Mick Jagger, I mean, his face looks like, you know, the craters of the moon. I mean, he doesn't.
Well, I mean, he's 78.
Yeah, nothing against. I'm just saying is that, you know, I mean, he's in physically great shape, and I've seen some footage of him at the shows. And like you said, he's running around. He's still doing the chicken walk, and he's doing everything that you want Mick Jagger to do. It really is age defying. But Keith Richards, looks more like Jack Sparrow now than he ever did, you know, but even more so. But, you know, it's funny, they've got these pictures of Keith Richards backstage, and it's so funny because without all of the rock and roll regalia, you know, without all the bandanas and the scarves and the cigarettes and the guitar and the, you know, the pants and the jeans and the boots and the spurs and the skull rings and all that stuff that makes Keith Richards Keith Richards, as well as the mascara. I think he may have just had mascara. He might not even have had sunglasses on. But, but when you see these backstage pictures of him, he looks like a little old man.
Oh,
it's so funny. He's got that little pot belly. Like my wife and I went to see Bob Dylan about a month ago or so. And we had really good seats. We're in the front, toward the front. And, he's 80.
Yeah.
So he comes out, you know, and I mean, he and at least he knows, you know, He's always very strange anyway, and you know, he never says three words to the audience, and he's always kind of in the shade. Well, now I see why, because, you know, he's 80 years old, so he doesn't have lights on him. He doesn't want anybody to see him. I don't know what he really looks like anymore, but he certainly, the lighting was to his benefit.
Right.
You know, because you never, and we were close enough where we should be able to see his face, and we couldn't, because now the band was all lit up, but he wasn't.
Right.
And every so often he would step out a little and you could see a little, but then he would get right back, you know. But the funniest thing was he came out and he had this kind of cool outfit with, you know, a jacket, like a glittery jacket, and, you know, these pants with a stripe down the side. So he's kind of looking kind of almost like Vegas-y, which is kind of cool. But we were close enough to see that he had that bad little old man pot belly, you know? And it's like, you know what? These guys are at an age now where you can't hide the fact. I mean, Mick Jagger has been about the only one. Paul McCartney looks amazing, and so does Ringo Starr. I don't know what serum they're taking, but in terms of physicality, yeah, Mick Jagger. Now, my point is, my question to you is, how did they overall sound? Like, they had that new drummer, so could you even tell the difference with Steve Jordan there?
I haven't seen the Rolling Stones live since their Bridges to Babylon tour, and I saw them at Soldier Field, and that was in the 90s, right? So it's been a long time. But I thought their drummer was great. I thought he sounded great. And what a tough shoes to fill.
Oh, you know, yeah, no kidding.
That's just really hard. But no, so they sounded great. I mean, really, truly. Like, I thought, I was so impressed with the show. And, you know, I thought the set list was great. I mean, they played a lot of stuff from the 60s, actually.
Well, yeah, I think, like you said, I mean, you've been some of the youngest people there. I mean, you know, right now, I mean, I make a joke because before I would always say that all the bands that I go to see are all on Social Security.
Right.
Well, now... Yeah. There's
their fans.
Yeah, no kidding. But now most of the bands that I see are, you know, in assisted living.
No, I know.
I mean, everybody that I see now is in their 70s, or, like I said, I just saw Bob Dylan, who's in his 80, who's 80.
Yes.
You know.
Okay, Jim, when we were waiting in line for food, you know, standing in a food truck line, I see this couple walking past us, and this older couple, I mean, I actually grabbed the rest of my group and pointed them out. Yeah. It was so sweet. Had to have been at least in their 70s.
Right. Well, they have to be.
Walking together, holding their hands, meeting in the middle, holding a cane together, but totally decked out in their Rolling Stones.
Right.
You know, the husband had the T-shirt on. The wife had a sweatshirt on. Like,
Mick Jagger's 78, so they were 78 too. Yes, I mean, they, you know, these are
so and honestly, like, the young people, the only young people I saw there were children, and it's because a lot of people, sort of in my age group, brought their kids. And in fact, again, standing in line, I smile. I turned around and I noticed this man who's around my age with a little girl who was maybe around. You know, I thought she looked like she was around James's age, and it turned out she was a year younger than him. So she's like 10 years old. And I sort of looked at them, and in my mind, I thought to myself, oh, that's so sweet. I bet this guy brought his daughter to this concert.
Right.
And he, I think, realized that I was kind of looking at them and smiling, and he looked at me and he said, this is her first concert. And I said, oh my gosh, that's so amazing.
Right.
I said, oh, your dad's bringing you to your
granddaughter
first concert. And I said to her, what a great first concert, the Rolling Stones. That's amazing. And I said, you know, I remember my first concert. It was Duran Duran, and my mom took me, and I was 9 years old. And he said to me, oh, well, she's 10. And I was like, oh, that's great. I was thinking, you look around my son's age. But I thought, wow, what an amazing, you know, you don't want to say this to a kid because they'll just roll their eyes. They don't care.
Right.
But someday she's going to look back on that.
Oh, yeah.
She's going to tell people, my first concert was the Rolling Stones. Yeah. My dad took me.
Yeah, I mean, my mom took me to see Elton when I was 12.
Yes.
I mean, you know, and back then, that was an even bigger thing because older people did not go to concerts. Mm. I mean, for my mom to go to that concert, you know, that, you know, in 1976, it was the height of his, you know, people were smoking marijuana. I mean, when you walked into the Chicago Stadium, I didn't even know what I was smelling. You know, I'm 12 years old. But there were no old people there. There were all young, you know, this is at the height of rock and, you know, the rock concerts just coming of age. And so there's no parents there. Right. So, I mean, my mom, I give her credit for taking me to that concert because she had to be like, you know, and I'm sure people were looking at her like, what's this old lady doing here? And she wasn't that old, but she was old to the average person in that crowd was probably 20.
Well, that's what I think people look at me and think for most other concerts I go to. But when I go see the Rolling Stones, I feel young again.
Oh, yeah. No, that's how I even feel. Like I said, what's nice about going to see these geriatric rock stars is I've always been into the older music anyway. So I'm still the youngest guy there. Even though I'm not young, I'm still young because even at the Bob Dylan concert, oh my God, there was people with, I mean, canes were the least thing. I mean, there were literally wheelchairs and walkers.
Right. No, I know.
Well, it's good to hear that. I mean, because I've always, you know, they always say that the Rolling Stones are the, you know, and they've called themselves that, the greatest rock and roll band, and they do deserve credit because even though they've had their personal problems with each other and they've broken up, they do realize that they're best together as a part, and so and now at this age they realize that they're a part of history and they're going to do this as long as they can, as long as they're not embarrassing themselves, and so they do deserve credit for sticking with it. Over the last couple of months, in fact, it's been kind of funny because Paul McCartney, you know. In the grand scheme of things, it's, you know, when you think about the British invasion and the major rock bands of that British invasion of the late 60s and mid to late 60s and early 70s, it was, you know, it's the Beatles, it's the Stones, and it's the Who. You know, those are like the three major bands. And the Kinks really should be in there, but they sadly got pushed aside. But and so there's always debate, well, who's better? Is it the Beatles or the Stones or the Who? You know, there's always this debate. And the funny thing is that the Beatles really gave up being a rock band when they stopped touring in 1966. They never toured again. I mean, they played this rock, you know, this rooftop concert, which is now getting revealed in that Get Back documentary, which is really amazing, amazing documentary. But the Stones have remained on the road. And they're always a better road band. Their albums are good and they're fine, but they're not as good as their live show. And so it's really a testament to them that at this age and 50 some years of this, that someone like you, that, you know, you weren't there when they first started, and you're saying that they were great. So that's quite a testament to them.
I mean, I have to say, these guys, they understand that they are an iconic rock band. They understand, as like the young people would say, they understand the assignment, okay? And they are total pros. Like, they completely deliver. It's worth every penny. I've seen them live before, you know? I don't think in the 90s on that tour, I don't think I fully appreciated how good they really are, but maybe I appreciate it more now because that was actually a long time ago. And these guys
are still at it.
Nothing is stopping them. Yeah. They're like, it's amazing what they can.
And that's really, and when you see them like the Stones, or you see, you know, like Elton still out there and things like that, you know, sadly, you know, in the next 10 years, there's going to be a lot of names that we're going to be like, oh my God, that person has passed away. I mean, that's just reality, you know? I mean, Ringo Starr is 81 years old, okay?
Yeah.
And that's why before COVID, I was really saying, you know, I really want to see as many of these bands that I can, that I've always wanted to see, whether they're at their peak or not, because, you know, I mean, in another 5 years, there's going to be, and it's 10 at the outset, but even the next five, you never know. And to go to see a show like that and come away with not just nostalgic or, well, it was nice to see them in person, but actually to say, wow, that was a great concert. I mean, I'm a huge Bob Dylan fan, and I have not seen him in about 25 years because he started to get very strange. He wouldn't talk to the audience. He wouldn't even look at the audience. He wouldn't even address the audience. He changed the songs around. I was listening, halfway through Like a Rolling Stone. I didn't even know that was the song. And I said, okay, I'm done seeing him. But I said, you know what? He's 80. I want to see him one more time. And I have to say, to your point, maybe not only do they know that they're historic and that they know what to do, but they also may be realizing that every show could be the last. And what I was impressed about to see Bob Dylan, he wasn't still talking to the audience, but he was totally into this show. And his voice, for whatever it is, I mean, you don't go to see Bob Dylan because he's a great singer. You go to hear the songs. You don't hear, he's not a great singer, but there was power in his voice. There was enthusiasm in his voice. And he was just 80 years. I said, there is no cooler 80-year-old guy than that guy right there. And he was into the show. And so I walked away, said, you know what? I'm glad I saw this, because I saw a better Bob Dylan at 80 than I saw one at 55.
Right.
He was better now than he was 25 years ago. And so I think there's a little of that going on, too, is that, it's not just, to see them in person, and they're not just having you pay for them to stand there and say, look at me. These rock stars from the 60s, they came up playing music. They are performers. They're not like these, on these talent shows like The Voice. These people never even have performed in a venue. These guys worked in bad little clubs since they were teenagers, and so they are performers, right down to their bones. And if they physically can do it, they will continue to do it. And that's one thing that I fear, that when this era of these performers dies, that's going to sort of die with them, because you don't see a lot of bands today have that kind of longevity or have that talent to completely entertain, so mm-hmm. I'm glad that you saw them, and I'm glad that you had a good time, because that was that's history. You saw history.
It totally, it was worth kind of all the headache and the traffic and all that. And now I'm getting greedy, because now I'm hoping, I hope I get to see them again.
Right.
I don't know. Because you also don't know how often these guys even intend to tour at this stage.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Thankfully.
It was worth the 2 year wait. Also.
Right. Well, I wish that would have been, I'm glad that you didn't have as disappointing and frustrating or potentially dangerous situation as many people did. But I'm hoping that that moving forward here, that these fatalities at rock concerts, which is really just it's unnecessary, and at this point in the game, they should know how to do crowd control. They should know how to put on big events for a lot of people. So to have this kind of, you shouldn't go to a concert and not come home that night.
Right.
That's unacceptable. So hopefully this has put a new shock into, or at least a new awareness from promoters and organizers of the events, that, we cannot slack on security. And especially,
and artists too.
It's everybody. Yeah, everybody involved.
Really
there's,
stop a show and yeah, say, yeah. You know what? We need to stop the show.
Well, the famous thing, once again, go back and watch the film Gimme Shelter, which is the film footage from the Rolling Stones Altamont concert, where, as I said before, the Rolling Stones, this goes to show you how naive they were. They hired the Hell's Angels, motorcycle gang to do security. And that's when Mick Jagger actually does stop the show during the show, because he sees them beating people up from the stage, and he goes, "Why are we fighting? Mm-hmm. Why are we fighting?" And so to have that at a racetrack again was kind of an interesting irony, with people complaining about it. But I'm glad you had a great time. I'm glad you saw the Stones. I'm glad it was worth waiting 2 years. I'm glad you got in and out.
Yeah.
And the best part of your story is what? The rickshaw.
The rickshaw.
The rickshaw. Fantastic.
Well, I'll tell you what. I owe that rickshaw guy a debt of gratitude. Oh. I think he's the only reason we actually didn't miss the beginning.
All I'm thinking about is the Seinfeld episode where Kramer and Newman want to have rickshaws. And they try to get homeless people to ride the rickshaw to pull the rickshaws. Oh, but anyway, well, thank you so much for taking the time to share your insights about not only the Rolling Stones in Austin, Texas, but also your views on decluttering. And we now learned about Leah the doll.
Baby Leah.
Baby Leah.
That's baby Leah.
Baby. It has to have the baby. It has to be in front of it.
Yeah.
So anyway, well, thank you so much, Emily. Have a great Christmas and New Year, and we will definitely talk again soon. It's always fun to chat with you, and I look forward to the next time.
Yeah, anytime. Thanks, Jim.
All right. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, send a message, send a link. Let them know that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion is much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 289. I'm Jim Tarano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screen.